Okay, we're holding. We're holding toward the end of Hanukkah. In another 3 days, Sunday morning, we're going to be after Hanukkah. And we're going to look back and think to ourselves, what have we taken out of Hanukkah? What did we do on Hanukkah? And what are we taking with us after Hanukkah? And somebody can ask, what do you mean, what are you taking with us after Hanukkah? Well, we don't have to take anything with us. We did what we were supposed to on Hanukkah. We lit the candles. We ate the oily foods. We said Al Anisim. We sang Hallel with the rabbi. We had our midwinter vacation in the afternoon. So finished, we did what we're supposed to. Why does it have to be that after Hanukkah we have to actually take something with us? So I want to give you a mashal. A ma'ad of a daimer, a boy, an American boy, lives here, learns here in Eretz Yisrael, and he gets engaged to a family who lives here. A family who moved here. The wedding is here, the vort is here. So he calls up his dad and he says, Dad, I got to come home for a week. His father says, what do you have to come home for? The vort is in Israel. The wedding is in Israel. Stay there. He says, Dad, I got to do my shopping. So the father says, why don't you shop in Israel? He says, kind of Israeli suit. I need my sins. I need my good shoes, American shirt. I can't have my Israeli stuff. I got to come home. The father says, fine, no problem. I'll send you a ticket for a week. Just make sure you bring your two big suitcases with. Two empty suitcases, make sure you bring with, and I'll buy you all the stuff you need. I'll buy you your laptop, I'll buy everything, all the accessories, everything that you need. I'll buy you and you'll bring it back. Fine. But the father said, don't forget. In addition to all the shopping, don't forget, you got to go to grandpa and grandma. They're not going to make it to the wedding. They can't fly all the way to Israel. They're too old. You got to visit them. You got to go to your shoshiva. And we have to make a little l'chaim for all your friends. They're not going to make it to the wedding. You got to think about other people also. Fine, no problem. The guy comes on the plane with two empty suitcases. He lands in America. Ah, mechaya. This is the life. He has his car. He rents his car right away at the airport. He doesn't have to stroll. You got to get on the bus and fight with the driver. And he closes the door on your fingers. Hey, this is how you're supposed to live in a car like a mensch. But he rents his car. He drives around. He visits his grandparents. He visits his friends. He has a lechayim with them. And he's so busy visiting everyone that it came the day when it's time to come back and his suitcases are still empty. He didn't have time to do any shopping. So his father says, tell me, did I spend $1,000 for nothing? I spent $1,000, so you should come and do your shopping and bring it back. Now you don't have anything. Now you're going back with empty cases. It's pointless. That means it is true that you visited your friends and you did what you're supposed to do, but Lamaisa, they can tachlis, you got to take something with you. You got to take back the shopping. The nimshal is the Hanukkah, and every chag is like that. It's not just that we got to do the mitzvahs of the chag and after the chag is over, we're finished, we're yotzer. We lit the candles and we did halal and we did everything we're supposed to and that's it. We have to take something with us. We have to take in our cases something that's going to keep us going. Every chag has a limut, a lesson. A limut. Every chag has a lesson. And we have to take the lesson with us afterwards. I heard from Don Segal, he said the name of one of the Rishonim, the Avodraham. When we daven in Shmone Esrei of Yom Tov, we say, V'asiyenu Hashem Elokeinu es Birchas Mayadecha. V'asiyenu is actually a very hard word to translate. V'asiyenu. So one of the pshatim of the Avodraham is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu fill us up, let us kilu take with us the limud, the lesson that there is to be taken from this chag. Dainu, recharge my batteries, recharge my spiritual batteries with whatever the chag has to offer. So it comes out that on Hanukkah, now we're nearing toward the end of Hanukkah, it shouldn't be that we're going to a party tonight and we'll maybe have another party tomorrow and we'll light the candles and we'll sing and that's it. And Hanukkah is over and finished. Where the next thing on our minds is Purim. It shouldn't be like that. It should be that there's some lesson we have to take with us, and we should take that lesson with us throughout the winter, throughout the rest of the year until the next Hanukkah. So what can we take out of Hanukkah? What does Hanukkah have to offer us that we should take with us? So the truth is that there are quite a few points of Hanukkah, and I'd like to stress on one point. The point I'd like to stress is like this. Rashi, in Parshas V'zoyis HaBrocha, Perek Yud Gimel Pasuk Yud Aleph, Rashi tells us a little bit about the Chashmonoim. I don't know if you know how many people were actually there at war, how many Jews went out to war. But Rashi says there were 13 Jews against tens of thousands of Greeks. That's what Rashi says in Vizei Sabrocha. 13. Now, this is mamish unbelievable. Imagine for a second, we're not talking about 13 Jews against 10,000 schleppers. We're talking about 13 Jews against tens of thousands of soldiers. Soldiers who've trained. Soldiers, if I'm not mistaken, it's brought down, they had elephants. Soldiers who have weapons. Against 13 Yidin, thin Yidin, weak Yidin. It says, Giborim Beat Koloshim, they were weak. They were Yidin who, I don't even know if they knew which way to hold a gun. They didn't have guns in those days, which way to throw, how to throw a spear. They were weak people. Now, let's stop for a second and think. If we have a major problem here, we're 13 weak people against tens of thousands of soldiers, trained soldiers. And now there's a problem, because we can't keep Shabbos, and we can't keep Mila, and we can't learn Torah. We have a problem on our hands, but we're not going to be suicidal. It's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous for 13 people to go out and fight. You're just killing your, you're just committing suicide. So why did they go out? What's the answer? The answer is that in Avodas Hashem, there's absolutely nothing to stop you. That's the core of the answer. In Avodas Hashem, nothing is going to stop you. Absolutely nothing. It doesn't make sense. It's ridiculous. If you're trying to do Avodas Hashem, you go, even though the odds don't make sense. It's not that the odds are, you know, the odds are against them. Hey, there aren't any odds at all. It's committing suicide. And yet, you see, in Avodas Hashem, a person should go against all odds. That is what we find in the war. And we find a similar idea regarding lighting the candles. Let's stop for a second and think together what happened. The Greeks came, and they were metame the Beis HaMikdash. There wasn't any oil. So they hadn't lit the candles for some time. They overpowered the Greeks. They came into the Beis HaMikdash, like we say in Allah Nisim every day. They overpowered the Greeks, and we say also in it's brought down in the Medrash, right? That they came into the Beis HaMikdash, they found Pach Echad Shel Shemen, and they lit it. Now, let's think for a second. We know that it takes 8 days to make oil. If it takes 8 days to make oil, does it make sense to light the menorah? The menorah hasn't been lit for some time. Does it make sense? Light the menorah. Then have to stop again lighting it because I don't have oil tomorrow and the next day. Why doesn't it make more sense just to wait for 6 days? The seventh day I'll light the menorah and then the next day I'll get the fresh oil and I'll continue lighting. Why light if I have to stop anyway?
How did they know they were going to be there for 7 days?
Because they knew that it takes 8 days to make the oil. Why did the oil have to burn for 8 days? Because they knew that it takes 8 days to make tar oil. So therefore they lit the first day, and it was a mess, and I had to burn for 8 days, right?
So
Chaim HaKohen, you're right. You're 100% right. You could say that. You could say that they knew today, this is what I have. But Mitzat Sheni, you could say, why start and stop? Let's wait so that we can continue. We don't have to start and stop. Adla Maisa, it could be that this is again the same idea. The same idea is you want to do Avodas Hashem, you do. You try your best. It doesn't make sense tomorrow, you're not going to have. Try. Don't give up. Try. And they tried. And Hashem made a mess and they continued burning. I would have thought that this would be a beautiful lesson for all of us, myself and all of you, to take out of Hanukkah. To take out of Hanukkah is fun. When we have a goal we would like to reach, all of you inside would really, really like to be Mezgaber. All of you would really like to grow if you had the right tools, if it were more or less easy at least. Some of you have a cheshek even if it's hard. You'd really inside, you would like to grow. But it's hard. It's very difficult. Everyone has his difficulties in Avodas Hashem. And the limo that I think we should take from Hanukkah is nothing, absolutely nothing is stopping us. Nothing should stop us. If I want in Avodas Hashem, I can have Ashkochas Hashem, Ashkocha Protest from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that even if the odds, not that the odds are against me, that the odds don't make sense, they absolutely don't make sense, Afilu Hachi, I'm going to do. I'm going to try. I've heard many times, boys have said, Many times you hear this boy say, this is impossible. It's impossible. You need a nest. I can't. And in the kaychas that I have, in the brain that I have, in the upbringing that I had, in the physical problems that I have, in the reading problems that I have, it's impossible for me to be a Talmid Chacham. Impossible. And the Rabbi Chana Basam on the Kevitz Shiurim brings, in Kevitz Mamorim, at page Sadi Gimel, in the name of Chaim Balozhiner, he says that in the Gemara in Saita, the very end of Saita, you'll find a list of simonim when Mashiach will come. In the Ikrus of the Mashiach, a list of simonim. You look at it, this is quite interesting actually. Quite a few simonim we have today. And at the very end of all those simonim, it says, "Ve'ein lanu lishoin el alavinu shabashamayim." We don't have who to rely on, but on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Gears in the Gemara is not mamish this Gears that I just said now, but this is what Rabbi Chana Basam quotes. Kind of right, he had that Gears in the Gemara. The Gears is slightly different. Ein lanu lishoin el alavinu shabashamayim. How does this come in? Ask Subhan Balazhana. This sentence, we're listing a bunch of cases, a bunch of simonim, that you know that Mashiach is on his way. When there's no money, When there's a crash in the economy, that's one of the things over there. Kolah Pruta Menakis, there's a problem with money. There are a bunch of lists of a bunch of things, and at the end it says, "Ein lanu lishon." We don't have who to rely on. Ela alavinu shabashamayim. Where does that come in? How did that fall in over here? That's a simon that Mashiach is coming. So pashtus you learn, "Ein lanu lishon." We're telling you that in the time of Mashiach, look how terrible the matzav is going to be. You better rely on Hashem. Says Reb Chaim Volozhiner. That it's another simon. When people raise their hand and they say it's impossible to correct the situation, I can't. It's impossible for me with my upbringing, with my career, it's impossible. I can't be Oved Hashem. I can't be a Bin Torah. I can't be a Talmid Chacham. That is what. Pardon?
That's going against. It's not relying on Hashem.
Meaning that I need Hashem's help and that I can't do anything myself. So he's sitting around waiting for Hashem's help. Yitzchak Isaac is pointing out a good point. To rely on Hashem is a murid to gezach. Rav Pshat, as they say, that they're waiting for Hashem to help them, and until Hashem helps them, they're not going to do anything. Which reminds me of a story in yeshiva. There was a boy who never used to come to davening. So the mashgiach came to him and he asked him, "Why don't you come to davening in the morning?" So the boy said, "I'll tell you what, Rabbi, I'll tell you exactly what happens. When I wake up in the morning, my Yetzer Tov tells me, get out of bed. And my Yetzer Hara tells me, turn over to the other side. And I tell them, you two fight it out, and whoever wins, wake me up." So that's the person who says, "Ein lanu lishon el avinu shabashamayim, only rely on HaKadosh Baruch Hu means I'm relying on Hashem. When the nest comes, then I'll be a Ben Torah." It's not like that. You got to fight. Al Kapanim, the bottom line is that there's nothing to stop a person, even if it's Shalei Kedach HaTeva, if you're trying to davening with Hashem. I'm going to tell you an unbelievable story. This is a person that I know personally, mamish personally. There's a boy who went to public school. Now, you don't have to have a very good imagination to realize that in today's day, a boy who went to public school, I don't remember if it was in the Bronx or it was in Queens. I think it was in Queens. Anybody who went to public school in his teenage years does not have very, very much chance of being a Talmid Chacham. Let's be realistic. With all the dirt and all the, and he never learned Torah. I think he did go to some day classes or night classes or something. But by the time he went to public school, this guy was mamish, a good runner, and he was a big action. He didn't give in, and he tried to be the best in everything in school. So much so, he said that there were a lot of blacks in his class, and they were so impressed with him, they called him Black. That was like mamish to spitz. He reached the epitome that he was Black. That's what he said. They called him Black. He said, "Mamish, he finally made it." You hear, boys? What happened to this guy? This guy went to yeshiva first. He went to Balshuvi yeshiva. And then he went to this yeshiva. And then he went to that. I know him personally. The person is a miyagea in Torah 16 hours a day. Not exaggerating. Now, I know in the curl that he learned, Rosh Kael said it's impossible for this guy to say anything. The guy, his mind was so clogged. He was pushing and pushing, but you know, 16 or 18 years of learning who knows what, and all the schmutz and everything, how's Torah supposed to go in? Today, the man is a Rosh Kael. He's written a few svarim. He's started writing Shas Shetshuva svarim, a poisik. He's a Rosh Koel, very, very, very matzliach. Okay? Nobody knows his history. I know it. This is Ein Dovah Oymed Mifnei Ratzon. This boy who had that Midas HaHakshonah said he's not going to give in. And therefore he fought and he fought till the kids in school called him black. He used that Koyach now for the good. And today is a big Rosh Koel. It's Rosh Koel today. Rabbi Chana Basaman writes something very interesting. In Kovetz Mamorim, page Tzadi Dalet, he writes something very interesting in the name of the Chofetz Chaim. He says, in the Russian Revolution, if I'm not mistaken, it was 1917. You know, the communists took over. And once the communists took over, they banned shuls, and they banned yeshivas, and they banned doing mitzvahs. They wiped it out completely. And they were matzliach. Unfortunately, look what happened. Look today, Russian Jewry, hundreds of thousands of Jews, totally wiped out, spiritually. Didn't learn anything. Some of them are starting to come back now, but they're totally, totally wiped out. 70 years of not learning Torah, 70 years without Rabbanim, without shuls, without Chadorim, did its job. Says the Chofetz Chaim, that had the Jews, in 1917, when the Russian Revolution took over, when the communists took over, had the Jews gone out and fought physically against the Russians, he said many Jews would have died, but they would have won. That doesn't make sense. The Russian army, it took them, I don't know, millions or hundreds of thousands, perhaps even millions of soldiers. They had what they wanted. You can't fight. Who's going to fight? Who? The old Russian Eden. Who's going to fight? Chofetz Chaim said, just like in Hanukkah, you go out against all odds for Avodas Hashem. You'll win, even though it doesn't make sense. The Chofetz Chaim said that they lost a golden opportunity. They should have gone out to fight. And many Jews would have died, but they would have won. This is an unbelievable thing. As a side point, I'll tell you that the Rabbi Chana Wasserman writes over there that you're only allowed to fight if you're fighting for Avodas Hashem, to keep mitzvahs. If you're fighting to save your skin, if they want to kill you, they don't want to make you shmad. They want to kill you, you can't go out to fight. It's not going to help. And that's what he writes by the Nazis. He writes that, and the Nazis, you cannot rise up against the Nazis. Because since they're not coming to take you away from Avodas Hashem, they want to kill you, even if you were to become an Aryan, you would be to become a Goy, they would still kill you. They went to look at a person who was a quarter Jew. A person whose father is Goyish, but his grandmother on one side is Jewish, they killed him. So they're not trying to stop you from doing mitzvahs. They're trying to get your skin. They're trying to kill you. Then you can't fight for Avodas. Then you can't fight Shelo Kederech HaTeva. And that's what we see. There was a Warsaw Ghetto uprising. There was an uprising in one of the concentration camps, maybe even more. But Lamai said it weren't matzliach. And everybody asks, why did the Jews go to slaughter the Tzion Mask? Yeah, never again. We're never going to go to our death like sheep to slaughter. It's not us, it's the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Kodesh Baruch Hu decided that's what it is. You can't fight him. You can't fight him, it's the Kodesh Baruch Hu did it. But Al Kopanim says, Rabbi Chana Wasserman, but in communism, which is similar to Hanukkah, there you got to fight. That's also why in Purim we didn't fight. Originally, when there was a Gzera, they tumu alive, al tochel, al tishtu, shleshi yomim. They fasted for 3 days. Why didn't they go out and fight? Because they were trying to save the skin. Haman wasn't interested in stopping them from doing mitzvahs. Haman was interested in wiping out the nation. Wiping out the nation, you can't fight. You gotta do tshuva. But if somebody is here to stop you from doing mitzvahs, you gotta fight. Al kapanim, this is the same idea again and again that we should take out of Hanukkah. Even if the odds are against us, even if the odds are almost non-existent, a person should be a fighter. You don't have to, I'm not saying to go out, take guns and fight. I'm saying fighting against the Yetzirah, fighting against the odds. Reb Yitzchok Hutner told a story over to Reb Aaron Kotler. And he said that when he told the story to Reb Aaron Kotler, Reb Aaron Kotler started to cry. The story was that there was a rich person who came to yeshiva. And he said, I have money to support a son-in-law. I want a son-in-law who's going to be a really, really big Talmud Chacham. So he went to yeshiva and he asked around. He wants the boy who's going to be a super Talmud Chacham in 40, 50 years so that he has this chos that his daughter will be the wife of that Talmud Chacham. And he supported the Talmud Chacham. He built him up. So he went to yeshiva and they said, look, there's a boy who's a murder to Kamasmit. Day and night he learns, but his head is blocked. I shouldn't say the Lashon. He said he didn't say his head is blocked. I'm sorry. He said it's very weak kishroinus, very weak brain, very weak. Everyone knows that to be a really big, super duper Talmud Chacham, you have to have a good brain. You have to. I saw the Chazon Ish writes it also. So this guy wasn't sure. Mitzad Echad, the kid had beautiful midas, and he was a masmid gadol, and yet his brains were very weak. He's not going to be the great rabbi. What should he do? And Rabbi Yitzchak Kotner said that he went to Rabbi Shurlei Diskin, who was the Rav of Brisk at the time. Later he moved to Eretz Yisrael. Baril Diskin, Shurlei. But originally he was the Rav of Brisk. And they asked Rabbi Shurlei, and you know what he answered? He said there's a Mishnah in Avos, Perek Dalet Mishnah Yud Aleph, that the Mishnah says, Kol HaMakayim Torah Me'oini, a person who keeps Torah from poverty, meaning even though he's poor and it's hard for him, he still keeps Torah. He's eventually going to keep Torah from Oysher. Meaning, a guy is poor. And it's very hard for him to stay in learning because he doesn't have. And he's got to cut corners here and cut corners there because he's living on a kollel check. It's very hard for him. But he pushes through and he doesn't give up. Eventually he's going to be Mekayim Me'oysher. Hashemokh is going to pay him back. Eventually it'll be easy for him. He'll be able to learn Torah Me'oysher. And the Gemara over there says the other way, Mevatel Torah Me'oysher, a guy who has it easy and he could learn and he's Mevatel Torah Me'oysher, Seifer Levatel Me'oysher, Rechman Latzlan. But Akabonim, a guy who keeps Torah from Oini, from poverty, even when he's poor, he's going to eventually be Zeichet to keep when he's rich. Listen, boys, to a beautiful Vart, Reb Shurlei Diskin said. The Baron Kotler cried over this Vart. Rabbi Shurlei Diskin said, what does it mean a guy who keeps Torah from poverty? It means poor brains. A guy who learns Torah even though his brain is weak, even though it's hard for him, and I'm telling you, I've seen it many, many times, boys struggling, and I know the struggle. A boy's learning Tosfos and he's struggling. Mamish, struggling. He can't make heads and tails out of it. Some boys have a problem with the reading. And even if you have a problem with the reading, you have a problem with translation. By the time you finish translating everything and you start understanding trying to understand what Tosfos means, you forgot the translation. So you're going back again. It's a struggle. Of course it's hard. Says the Heiliger of Chaim Balazhin, the Mishnah in Avos says, if you keep Torah Me'oini, you learn Torah even though it's hard for you, even though you're struggling, Sefer L'Kaima Me'oisha. Eventually Hashem is going to open up your mind. And you're going to be able to be Mekayim Me'oisha. We have to be careful. Those of us who could be Mekayim Me'oisha, those of us who have good heads, have to be extra careful not to waste your brain. Rachman Letzlan. But I'll put him this, Rabbi Aaron Kotler cried over. And what happened to this boy? You're interested to know what happened to this boy? This boy we spoke about. Who he was a masmid, but he had a very weak brain. So the father-in-law took him as a chassin. That's what Reb Shurlei Diskin said. And he grew up to be Rabbi Yosef Zundel, the Rav of Eisenstock. And he wrote a sefer on Yeridea called Chadrei Dea. That's this boy. Muritika Maisa. But this is a Muritika Limud for us. Not to give up. It doesn't make sense. This guy had a weak brain, not to give up. And eventually HaKadosh Baruch Hu can open it up. What? I don't know. From his, he was moved. He was moved by the Vort. I don't know. I heard from Reb Don Segal, a famous darshan in Yerushalayim. He said that he knew a boy that when he was a bacher, they used to call him a kalavasa. Kalavasa is either Russian or Yiddish for a pumpkin. They used to call this boy a pumpkin, and they called in Yiddish or Russian kalavasa. Why did they call him a pumpkin? She said like this. She said, a normal person has two ears where the Torah can go in. A pumpkin, there's no hole for anything to go in. There's no hole, it's sealed. This guy was a pumpkin. There was no place, Bechlau. His head was so clogged, there was no place for anything to go in. Don Segal said he knows the person. He remembered them calling him a pumpkin when he was a bacher, and he grew up to be a big tzaddik. That's what he said. It doesn't make sense, guys. A pumpkin isn't even a hole to go in. That's the limud we're learning from Chanukah. We're not afraid of anything. You have a head like a pumpkin? She have a head like a pumpkin. Fine, no problem. Keep on drilling. Keep on going and it'll go. We find that the Pasuk says, Kiner mitzvah v'Torah or. Chazal tell us that Torah is nimshol to a ner. Torah is nimshol to fire. We find in the Beis HaMikdash that we had fire in the Beis HaMikdash. The Hadlakas HaMenorah. If Torah is nimshol to a ner, to the fire, then what is the Menorah nimshol to? to the person holding the fire, to the person holding the Torah, to the person learning Torah, right? Boys, if Ner is the Torah, then the menorah is nimshal to a person holding the Torah, a person who learns the Torah. How was the menorah made? Do you know? I don't know if you know. That of all the kelim that were built in the Beis HaMikdash, the menorah was the only one that was so complicated and the details so intricate that Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't do it. Moshe Rabbeinu was quite a bright man. Moshe Rabbeinu learned the whole Torah in 40 days, Kol HaTorah Kula. And yet this was too hard for him. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you know what, no problem. Take the piece of gold and throw it into the fire and it'll come a menorah. But it wasn't possible to make. It was so hard and so complicated. What is this a remez for us? If you want to be a Ben Torah, if you want a whole Torah inside you, you have to be very, very good. You have to be perfect. You have to be makbed on every small detail. You have to be makbed on your Ben Adam L'chaveri. You have to be makbed b'akpada gemura that you're a true clay kibble. The king once came and he said he's giving out free gold. Bring your own bag. He's supplying gold, he's not supplying bags. Everybody, grab a bag and you run. This guy grabs a bag that has three holes on the bottom and he runs. And the king fills up his bag with gold all the way to the top and he throws it over his shoulder and he's walking home and the coins are falling out from all sides. By the time he gets home, he just has a few coins left. Why? Because the clay kibble, the utensil that you brought, had a hole in it. So you can't stay inside. Torah has to stay inside somebody who's a good utensil. So in addition to working on ourselves and not giving up, we also have to perfect ourselves. I'm speaking to myself, I'm speaking to, we can all work together on this, but a person wants to be Be'emes HaKlei Kibbol for Torah, we have to perfect ourselves, be like the menorah, be a perfect example, a good clay kibbol to receive the Torah. I want to finish off with one point, and that is as follows. Everybody knows in this yeshiva, we don't have like a kibbutz. I want to explain a little bit. So some of you may not be acquainted with what a kibbutz is. I want to explain what a kibbutz is. In many, many yeshivas, you have an older group of boys. Kibbutz is an older group of boys. What happens is a boy learns in the yeshiva, and then he wants to upgrade, and he moves up to kibbutz. Usually kibbutz have their own nagadshir, and their choshuv, and, you know, everything has its milas and its chesroinus. Sometimes the kibbutz, you know, have their midas problem also, that nobody's allowed to come and speak to them because they're kibbutz, and they have to sit in their own table in the dining room. Okay, but kibbutz is a higher shir. What's the mile of kibbutz? Why is kibbutz so important? Some people are very makbet to have a kibbutz. Rav Shach, I know, worked on having a kibbutz in Gateshead when I was there. Why is kibbutz so important? Kibbutz is important because when a boy comes into Beis HaMedrash and he sees the Choshever Bahrim, he sees the older group of boys, and they're a dugma, they're a symbol of how a boy can grow. That's a beautiful thing. That's called a kibbutz. Now what happens is, if you have a yeshiva that doesn't have a kibbutz, then sometimes a boy feels he wants to grow, and when he gets a little bit to the top, he doesn't feel he has somebody to look up to. And he wants to run away. He wants to go to a better yeshiva, which is understandable. Everyone wants to grow and steig and go weiter. But if it were possible to make a kibbutz, if it were possible to have a group of older boys who they are the semel of what a good Ben Torah can be, it's a beautiful thing. It's a schus for everybody else. It's a moritik schus. I'll tell you a story, and I can't say any names. There's a choshuva yeshiva. Choshuva, a decent yeshiva on a very, very decent level. With a decent amount of boys. The yeshiva started with two boys. I know the two boys. It started with two boys. Two boys, simple boys. Must meet them. They sat and they learned. And after they learned, the two boys learned, they brought some more boys. The second year, it's very hard to start a yeshiva, you should know. Very, very difficult to start a yeshiva. It's easy to strengthen a yeshiva, but to start a yeshiva is very hard. But these two boys learned together, and then the next year they brought another group of boys. It was a little bit shaky, and afterwards they brought more, and eventually the yeshiva today is standing lit tif eres. Now, let's look back and think, what the schar of those two boys are. If those two boys weren't masmidim, then nobody's going to, well, why should I say, you don't even have a yeshiva, what, two guys drawing around? But because those two boys were masmidim, and they learned Pasmod de Gedoyla, So therefore, the next year, they were able to say, look, we're starting yeshiva. We have two boys. Sure, it's a joke. What's two boys? But two boys is something. We have already two boys learning basketball. So let's bring a group of five or six. They brought the next year a group of five or six or eight, whatever it was. And the eight were mushpa by the two. And then, from that, it started yeshiva. Now, years later, those two are still getting a sachar. That they helped build the yeshiva. That's how a kibbutz can be. That's exactly how a kibbutz can be. If boys are mischazik themselves, and they become a symbol of hasmada, a symbol of avodas Hashem, a symbol of benod l'chaveira, and people learn from that, they can strengthen the yeshiva. Now, let's talk tachlis. At the end of the day, it's good, Baruch Hashem, the yeshiva is very matzliach here, and the rabbis are being matzliach. But if there were a stronger group of older bachrim, I think there would have been a tremendous te'elis in yeshiva. And also, when a boy starts to be mischazik and learning, and really is mischazik and learns well, he can move up to kibbutz instead of leaving. And he can be a symbol for other boys. And look, I was also a Levaria boy once. And look where I am now. Not to show off, but to help boys climb the ladder. And you can have the sechar of all your learning. Now, some of you are probably thinking to yourself, well, am I going to be a kibbutz? It's just about struggling understanding the Gemara. But that's like we said, Hanukkah, not to be afraid. There's nothing stopping you. I would have suggested that some of you should consider this point. We're leaving Hanukkah now. We're starting the second half of the winter. We have two options in front of us. We can either just waste the time and wait until this month is over, which is a terrible, terrible chabal. Terrible chabal to lose everything. Or we can say, you know, I'm setting myself a goal to climb higher, maybe even to form a group of older boys, a group of better boys, who we're going to be a core that are always in Beis HaMedrash. There'll be a kol turn in Beis HaMedrash even in the afternoon. There'll be a kol turn in Beis HaMedrash in the morning. And that way it'll be easier also to bring boys. They're always working on trying to recruit boys. And it's much nicer if we can say, you know, this mamash akhoyla Beis HaMedrash. There's a group of six boys in Beis HaMedrash morning, afternoon. It's a beautiful thing. Imagine, if you go out to recruit boys and you say, look, we have a Beis HaMedrash kol turn. Morning and afternoon seder. So, a guy first year, he drays around, he does learn, he doesn't learn, but at least he knows that in Beis HaMedrash there's a kol turn. But if in Beis HaMedrash isn't a kol turn in the afternoon, and there's nobody around, then it's a little harder. So, with this I'll finish. And that is, that what we're taking out of Hanukkah is nothing is in our way in Avodas Hashem. That's the main point I wanted to get to you. Nothing is in our way in Avodas Hashem. If I want, you daven HaKadosh Baruch Hu and you push b'mesiras nefesh. And it has many different ways. Some people have problems because they feel they don't understand, and some people have problems because there's noise in the Beis HaMedrash, and some people have a hard to concentrate because there's somebody schmoozing, he did give a get, he didn't give a get. All the different things that are going on in Beis HaMedrash, a person has to be b'mesiras nefesh. Nothing is stopping me. I can't learn when I hear he did or he didn't give a get. Now mom is dying and burning inside me to find out what happened. I can't wait. I gotta hear what's happening and what happened. And the answer is, it interests me, yes, but Torah is more important. Torah is more important. And I'm gonna push. It doesn't make sense because my mind suddenly wanders off in the second. I'm going to push and I'm going to be Mesiras Nefesh and home in on the Tosfos that I'm learning, or home in on the Gemara. And nothing is in our way because Hanukkah taught us nothing is going to stop us. If you want, you can have Shatta Deshmai Shalakadach HaTeva. I would also like to suggest, and that is the older boys especially, should consider this what I mentioned, and that is consider maybe concentrating on making a group together. Of a group of six boys that they work together as a tzibor, trying to make sure there's always a kol torah in Beis HaMedrash in the morning and the afternoon. If you do manage to do such a thing, you do not realize what a change can be in Beis HaMedrash, and you don't realize what schar you can have. That 20 years down the line, because of you guys who grouped together, six older boys grouped together and decided, we're going to try not to speak in the middle of Seder, not to make a Chilul Hashem. When somebody comes into the Beis HaMedrash, he sees an older boy who's really supposed to be from the better boys, and he's schmoozing about who knows what, because look at this. It's a Chilul Hashem. So if the older boys make a group together, and they decide, we're going to try to help each other out, to make a Kol Torah in the morning, make a Kol Torah in the afternoon, if we have to schmooze, we'll go outside and schmooze quietly in a corner. But not in the Beis HaMedrash. Beis HaMedrash should be a place for kol Torah. The schar you can have, the schar, all the aliyah everyone can have for all the years, can be in your source. A good Hanukkah to everyone.
I don't, you know what?